Welcome to the Pre-Post Film Review, Catch-Up Edition. I'm John Asquith.
And I'm Matt Stevenson. So this is a bonus episode, I guess, or potentially maybe a new regular feature here at Pre-Post. Yeah. Because there's so much that's been released and we've been busy and haven't been able to sort of do as many big regular episodes as we usually would, we thought we'd put together a little bonus episode and perhaps do a little catch-up on a couple of films that we have both seen and would have liked to do episodes on but didn't get the chance to. So this episode we're going to be chatting about the Spielberg film The Post and the Guillermo del Toro film The Shape of Water. Mm. And we'll see how this goes. If this is a success, then perhaps maybe monthly or every couple of months we might do another one of these that just lets us delve into some films that we aren't exploring on our full episodes of Pre-Post.
Yeah, exactly. I think we feel a bit guilty sometimes if we don't have a trailer review, so we just won't talk about the movie on the pod, and this is a good excuse for us to talk about stuff that we can't fit into the main show. So
exactly, and that's probably a good place to mention that as we're not doing trailer talks, this will all be spoiler filled. So if you haven't seen the film, probably don't listen to either of these. But if you have, we'll be chatting The Post and Shape of Water with full spoilers from the get-go.
Yeah. And just to keep you on your toes, we might just throw out some spoilers for each movie in the other review. You know, talking about The Post, just throw a few Shape of Water spoilers in there.
Just to mix things up a bit, yeah.
Yeah, it mixes things up a bit. No, we won't do that. But we will talk about The Post first, I think, Matt.
Yes,
so that's the plan. For anyone that is keen to hear our thoughts or has seen the movie, that's what we're going to discuss first.
So, can I ask you a hypothetical question?
Oh, dear, I don't like hypothetical questions.
Well, I don't think you're going to like the real one either.
Do you have the papers?
Not yet.
This is a devastating security breach that was leaked out of the Pentagon.
The most highly classified documents of the war.
The Times says 7,000 pages detailing how the White House has been lying about the Vietnam War for 30 years.
The way they lied, those days have to be over.
So I'm just going to try and segue into that now. And that's the new Spielberg film, as you mentioned. Always a big deal for us when there's a new Spielberg movie because we're massive fanboys of him.
Yes.
And his work. And this was a pretty exciting and quick little release of his. I feel like this production came together quite quickly and they've sort of acknowledged that they did it because of, you know, what's happening in American politics at the moment. Well, I guess what were your sort of expectations before going into this, Matt, and what were your general thoughts?
In terms of expectations going in, I don't think I had that many, to be honest. I didn't see the trailer. I was excited purely based on the Spielberg name, the cast as well, being the Tom Hanks and a Meryl Streep fan. It seemed like a pretty big occasion that they'd be in a prestige film like this together. That was an exciting proposition. I guess my expectations were reasonably high, though, you know, I kind of expected an Oscar-baity, prestige-y Spielberg, you know. I didn't expect anything exciting or bombastic out of it, or I guess different, really. It seemed like it was going to be a very safe Spielberg film, but, you know, still exciting. And I think that's pretty much what I got. Like, it landed bang on where I expected it to. I mean, I think that, I guess, it was perhaps a bit more poignant and timely than I expected. Almost to a fault, I would say. Like, it feels like it's trying a little bit too hard to sort of really nail some of those themes. But, I mean, I think it feels kind of important for the times that we're living through, both, and not just in terms of the importance of, like, trustworthy and well-reported news, but also the gender politics of everything and how Streep's character is sort of like this woman surrounded by all these men that just don't take her seriously, and it's sort of on her shoulders to keep the integrity of this paper alive. So I kind of didn't expect that angle and was impressed about that. But even that, having said that, I feel like it perhaps hammers some of that home a little too hard as well. I really liked Streep, but I mean, I guess we can get into this a little bit more detail later, but there's specifically a moment at the end when she like leaves the courthouse and like walks down the steps, and there's just like all these women that are like picketing and they all kind of like look at her as she, and it was just like, it was like, at that point we get it, you know, like she's a great female role model. We didn't need it to like slam it in our faces right at the end. But, you know, it's a good message, so it's not like it's, I have that many hard feelings that it's going hard for it. But yeah, I guess overall, probably middle of the road Spielberg, I would say. To be, if I'm honest, actually, I did find it, at least the first half, a little bit dull, and then it picked up for me in the second half of the film once they sort of got into the more of the drama about whether to publish or not, because I found the first half was like sort of strangely empty of suspense. It was kind of like, oh, we don't have the papers, we don't have news, oh well, you know, like not much was really happening. I guess they were investigating it kind of, but like there wasn't much tension or drama until the sort of second half of the film when they get the source, and then it becomes the, you know, a question of what to do with the information that they have, or how to get out in front, and whether they face the courts and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, at the end of the day, I'd say middle of the road Spielberg for me, but still enjoyable. What about you?
Yeah, I had fairly high expectations going into this one. I wasn't expecting it to be, you know, the absolute best or the up there with the highest level Spielberg stuff, but because it is so relevant, I thought to the times, I thought I might get more out of it because of that, and I might be more perhaps emotionally invested in what's going on, or intellectually invested. So I was maybe slightly disappointed even when I finally saw it, because it was pretty, yeah, by the numbers, Spielberg, and by the numbers kind of, I don't even know what you'd call it, like journalists, you know, cracking a big story sort of thing that we've seen before. I'd say a movie like Spotlight is a better execution of that sort of story. But I do think it's important, as you said, because of the quick turnaround and the spirit in which it was made. And it's almost important in a historical sense that when you're looking back at Spielberg's filmography, like 50 years from now, you know, there'll be a little footnote next to the post and how quickly it was put together in response to the, you know, Trump administration's sort of, you know, attack on the free press and things like that, and how it mirrored what Nixon had done, and they saw a chance to do it. And I think on a production level, I was impressed and interested by that side of things. And I also I just still really like Spielberg's staging and the way he shoots. It's just fantastic. And
it looks
so
great, doesn't it? Yeah.
It looks so good, and it just feels so classic now. I think we said this when we reviewed Bridge of Spies too. You feel like you're watching like an old Hollywood filmmaker. And he is now, you know, but like all the other films, like new bigger blockbustery or anything that he would be competing with, they just filmed completely differently. He has such a classic way of framing things and staging. I really noticed it in this movie too. Like, actors have to hit their mark where they're standing, and depending on how they're interacting with each other, they'll turn away or they'll lean in. And you just don't see a lot of that. I know to some that's over the top or perhaps cheesy, his he's sort of criticized of being sometimes, but I love it, I think, because no one else is doing it, really. A lot of other films these days feel like the actors are directed on performance and, you know, marks, places to stand when it's really important to the scene. But otherwise, it's not thought about in that classic staging way, I think, that Spielberg does. And because this movie is just character.
Exactly. It's just this kind of film, yeah.
Exactly. Like, if you've just got a movie of people sitting in rooms talking, then it actually is important when they stand, when they sit, how they compose their body language. And so that was interesting to me, that side of it, the filmmaking side. I would agree that it is a little dull in parts. I didn't know. I knew the kind of the basics, I guess, historically of what was there, but I didn't know all of it. And so there was some interesting tidbits, and that it doing this, at least the way they frame it in the movie, doing this, publishing these papers was a way that the Washington Post became like a top tier newspaper
that could compete with
the New York Times. That was interesting. It was really cool to see how they used to fucking print the newspaper.
Like the actual printing press itself.
The metal presses, yeah.
How just like aesthetically pleasing is it watching that run? Like,
I love that, yeah. I could watch 40 minutes of that.
Yeah, so, honestly.
Of those guys like putting all the little tiles in and stuff.
Totally, man.
It was really cool. And I guess if I never thought about it. Like, it totally makes sense that that's how it was done. Back then, but I had never actually just sat down and thought about it, and it was just cool to see, and it made me kind of nostalgic for newspapers.
Yeah, totally.
I enjoyed it. There's lots of interesting stuff in there, but yeah, I guess we're sort of in the same boat that I wouldn't rave, I guess, about it. I would recommend people watch it if they're at home and they've sort of got nothing else to do and they're interested in that storyline.
Yeah, totally. And shot on film as well, as far as I know, which I don't know whether Spielberg does all the time these days or how much of his stuff
gets shot
and always still film, but
yeah,
I mean, looks good. I always just prefer things to be shot that way. Mm.
Yeah. It looked really cool. I was hoping, I don't really know what John Williams would have done with it, but he did do the score, and that was, I mean, there wasn't much to it, really. I guess I'm always hoping that John Williams will, like, knock it out of the park, but that was also, I guess, along with the rest of the movie, just kind of hitting it where it had to and sort of go above and beyond.
Also, like, I really don't know how I feel about this, but you're saying like a film like Spotlight does something better. I mean, the other obvious example is All the President's Men, which is, you can almost not separate the two. Like, the subject matter is so intertwined and interlinked in terms of what's happening in the films. But the sort of bold choice of this film to end with the opening shot of All the President's Men. This is almost a direct prequel.
Interesting.
Which I don't know whether I like the audacity of or hate it. Like, it is either brilliant or very, very stupid to do that. I can't decide. It's such a weird choice.
That's really interesting. Because
like,
it's
literally the opening shot of All the President's Men.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't make that connection.
Yeah.
So that is really interesting. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. But what I thought was cool, the way I interpreted it when I saw it anyway, was... And this is probably just me putting baggage on top of it, but this movie ends like a superhero film where we've like, you know, we've won one battle, but it was like a stinger at the end. Like, what's going to happen next? But like the press are the heroes, you know what I mean? And so you've got like slow zoom in on Nixon, like, yeah, you got to do this, you got to do that. And then, you go to Watergate and the music's like kind of like, you know, rising up like it would at the end of like a Marvel video or something. And I was like, wow, that's like, that also is relevant to our times, you know.
That is so funny. I didn't think of it like that. It is like a Marvel stinger for adults.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what can the newspaper people tackle next?
So That's so funny. The other thing I was just going to mention, which is such a really, really strange nitpick, but I found it so odd that this whole film is so good in terms of the gender politics, and it's, you know, making a very clear point about the women in the workplace and giving characters like Meryl Streep like a voice. But there's a moment at the very end when they're like waiting for the verdict of the courtroom case, and there's like the one woman in the office, and she's like on the phone, like relaying the message. But before, and just as they were like about to tell the verdict, this just like random fat bloke walked, like it cuts to him, and he just like yells the verdict, like he's the one that gets to tell the verdict to the whole office. Like it was just such a, like they set up her as the one that was doing all this like exposition. And it, like, I don't know whether it was meant to be some sort of like commentary on her not being treated well in the office. It just was just so such a weird choice to have, because he was a no strange one as well. Like he wasn't a main character that was like, it was so odd. I just remember seeing that scene and going, what a strange filmmaking choice that was. Seems to undercut some of the work that you've done before. Very strange. Very strange.
Yeah, so true. I didn't notice it at the time, but you're right.
But yeah, overall, I did also think at the very beginning when it opened with the Vietnam War stuff that it did feel a little Vietnam War cliche-y. It's almost like what we bagged out Kong Skull Island being like. Let's
drop the music connection. And
yeah, it was hyper-stylized a little bit too much, and it was the music was the key thing. Like it had the cliche like music cues that we've seen and heard in like thousands of Vietnam War films or shows or whatever. It's a bit tired these days.
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree with that. I will say, I just like, you know, I just love Spielberg's, he believes in goodness and people doing the right thing. And I like that he pushes that in his movies quite a bit. And he gets accused of being, cheesy or sentimental, and sometimes it does go too far that way, but I just like that he's just not a cynical filmmaker. He sort of wears his heart on his sleeve in his films, and I just really appreciated that in this crazy modern time. I like that he's there, you know, just reminding us of you know, but that I guess those sort of cliche American the values that he obviously really believes in and is nostalgic about, that someone is still kind of pushing that has a voice.
Yeah, definitely. And that feels old school as well. Like you were talking about the filmmaking style, like it goes hand in hand, and it is rare these days, or like he seems like one of the last bastions of that kind of, I mean, obviously there are the hopeful films and hopeful filmmakers, but there's something about his viewpoint and filmmaking that feels very classical and in a good way, not in a cheap nostalgic way either.
No, not until Ready Player One.
I'm a bit worried about that. Also, performance, I thought Streep was really good. I really liked her. Yes. She was the standout for me.
I agree.
Nervous kind of mannerisms and tics, and I thought she was really, really good.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Not really knowing much about her character going in, I thought she'd be portraying like a strong-willed head of the business sort of woman, not knowing that she was just new in the role. And I like that. Yeah, she was constantly like trying to assert herself and then being pushed away by these men and like having to keep, you know, pushing forward. And there's a really nice moment where she gives that speech and says, you know, I can't remember the exact line, but you know, when you've been told your whole life that your opinion doesn't matter and then suddenly it does, you know, that's a very hard thing. That particular moment was quite nice. And
yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Cool. So thumbs up, but not all the way up. is that our final verdict?
Yeah, thumbs tilted a bit up.
No, I think I would give it a thumbs up, but I wouldn't be screaming its praises, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, Yeah, I suppose, yeah, what, out of 5 stars, maybe 3?
Yeah, something like that? I'd be on the same, but maybe, yeah, 3, potentially 3.5, given the poignancy of the subject matter, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
Sweet.
All right, well, moving from...
Yeah, come on. I was waiting for a really clever segue.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. I was waiting for my brain to give me something at the last second. It's not going to happen.
All right. So the other film that we need to talk about is Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of Water.
If I told you about her, the princess without voice, what would I say?
Eliza, come on. Eliza, hurry, hurry.
Now, I saw this a while ago at the London Film Festival, so my memory might be a bit rusty. So perhaps you can kick this off, John, and just let us know what you thought of the film. And I guess, like the post, what were your expectations going in?
My expectations for A Shape of Water were pretty high, I must say. It's sort of being billed, or at least... the way I interpreted it was, Guillermo del Toro kind of returning to his roots and working on a another kind of dark fairy tale monster movie that is, you know, not Pacific Rim or he was working on a long time of, I guess, The Hobbit and Mountains of Madness. And he had all these sort of big scale projects that kept falling through. And he always talked about this being a very personal movie, similar to Pan's Labyrinth. And so it was basically him returning to a Pan's Labyrinth-esque film, which I was very excited about. I did happen to see the trailer in front of a film, and I thought it was very spoilery. I'm happy to say that it wasn't. But when I saw it, I was fuming because it showed... it showed Michael Shannon bleeding, and I thought, well, that's from the end of the film, but it's actually very early on when he lost his
film. Right, yeah.
So I thought I wasn't going to be surprised by this movie. I thought I kind of had it figured out. So that was my thoughts going in. And so I went in and I saw the movie, and I thought it was fucking awesome. I loved it. I really, really loved this film. It's... I found it very moving and very, it spoke to me in many ways because I've always wanted to date a fish.
Finally get to see your dream beautifully realized on film. Exactly.
Exactly. And now I can start talking about it now and sharing it with everyone. all that stuff I said is true though, because, not the fish part, the rest of it. because this is a movie about outsiders and about misfits and nerds and geeks and people that are, minority groups. And I'm not in a minority group, obviously a white straight dude, so I'm very privileged. But in my own subset, culture subset, me and my friends got picked on for being nerds and stuff and in high school, and I still carry around some of that baggage. And I still feel, even just with like what my line of work I'm not an alpha male, you know what I mean? And so you still feel a bit on the fringe of what would be mainstream society. And this is turning into like a
therapy session.
But this movie is all about that. It's all about, what Michael Shannon's character represents is what he thinks society has to be like, which is this cliche alpha male man, and he's got the the you know, stereotypical wife at home and kid, and he should be happy, but he's not. And there's a sort of a subplot with the Richard Jenkins character, or a couple of subplots with him, actually. One with him being a gay man in that time period where he's sort of shunned from society. And another where he is working in advertising, and he has a traditional role, which is painting advertisements, sketching advertisements. And he's being pushed aside by photography and by sort of focus group thinking and things like that. And, you know, it's just this movie, I feel, really is Del Toro's love letter to the misfits and the outsiders and the artists of the world that don't fit in and don't want to and don't want to be like everyone else. At least that's how I sort of felt when I watched it, and came away feeling quite moved from that message in the movie. And, you know, that's without even going into how beautifully shot it is and designed, of course. Like, he just has such an eye for everything, for creature design, for set design, cinematography, just these beautiful, beautiful, surreal, romantic images. I loved it. I really loved it. Having said that, I can see why people wouldn't, because it wears its heart on its sleeve. It doesn't have a cynical bone in its body. And if you can't get past some of the sexual stuff in it, I can see some people just going, this is silly. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is ridiculous. But for me, it worked on that sort of artistic interpretation. Anyway, I feel like that was a bit of a gushy rant.
That's great.
What did you think, Matt?
I agree with pretty much everything you said completely. But then I feel like I'm also a little bit on the ladder and couldn't get over certain things. So I, coming out of this film, I feel like I respected it, and for what it represented and what it was saying, more so than I loved the film itself. Like, I wasn't emotionally engaged by the end. It wasn't just the sex stuff, even though I respect that, and I actually really liked the way they linked, like, they brought sexuality into this fairy tale, and, like, having our main character, like, introduction to Sally Hawkins, she's, like, masturbating in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And this whole, like, link between sexuality and water, I really liked that. I respected it. It's bold. It's something you don't hardly ever see. But I did find it hard to get past having sex with a fish man. It just got, like, a little bit silly with the, like, when she makes the gesture about how he has a penis and stuff. Like,
yeah, I totally agree.
That
was too, you know, yeah. Oh, sorry.
It just lost me a little bit. Yeah. And it might not even just be the sex of it. I think it was that I didn't believe there was more of a connection other than the fact that they were both outsiders. Like, I didn't know anything about this fish man other than that he was this tortured soul that was stuck in this horrible situation that she freed him from. Like, there was no other connection there that I felt. So by the end, I wasn't, you know, emotionally moved by their relationship, which I think was the thing that stopped me from absolutely loving this film, because I agree with everything else. I love that it's about the minority. Like, it's literally about, both literally about people that don't have a voice and metaphorically about people that don't have a voice in society. Yeah. You know, like, it's really smart. And Sally Hawkins is great. Like, you know, apparently had to learn sign language and stuff for this film. It makes it seem so natural. She's incredible. She's amazing. Yeah. And like you said, visually just stunning. I loved Michael Shannon's villain. Like, one of my favorite scenes is the weird toilet scene where he, like, pees without, like, touching himself and then washes his hands, like, before he goes, and he has this speech about how a man always washes his hands before or after, never both. It's so bizarre and hilarious. Yeah. He's just, like, this weird alpha male dominance to him that's just, I really liked. I found it hilarious and fun. And all the I mean, I always love Guillermo del Toro's, like, bursts of hyperviolence, but he's like, yes, when he loses his fingers and they like start to rot when they try to reattach them and stuff. Like,
yeah, and everyone, it gets to the point where people are saying to him, like, it stinks, you know, you can almost smell it watching the movie, that kind of rotting flesh. Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, it's great. So, yeah, I don't know, I guess, like I said, I admire the film more than I love it. I think it's still great, and it would be quite high up in my, like, rankings of Del Toro films, but it's not, like, up there with Pan's Labyrinth or... I mean, I think I even liked Crimson Peak better than this, but that really worked for me, more so than it did for most people, I think. But yeah, it's just, I think it's similarly, in terms of the post, feels quite timely, you know, like it is speaking to,
it does, yeah,
important issues that are very relevant right now.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And I think, you know, you bring up a good point about the romance, because in my gush at the start there, I didn't even really touch on that, because that, in a way, that is, even though that's what that's at the center of the film, it's not what moved me and what I connected with.
Right.
It was more the thematic stuff about the minority groups and being an outsider. So, and I do agree, it goes, you know, I could buy a bonding love between them, and maybe even a subtle hint of some kind of romantic, you know, an embrace. But when you have the explicit sort of explanation the next day about his dick coming out of his little flap or something, I'm not sure that we needed that.
Yeah.
And it just, you get an image then, you know. Of,
yeah. And I think it's also...
And it's just kind of weird.
It weirdly tries to have it both ways in terms of making him, like, clearly a humanoid, like, human-esque person, you know, so the relationship isn't that weird. But then he also is, like, a fucking animal. Like, he eats a cat. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, see, that was... Like, I loved the dark humour of that and the shockingness of it.
Yeah.
But it was... Yeah, it did almost diminish their love a bit.
Exactly,
you know?
Then because then she's, like, having, like, sex with the animal. Yeah.
Yeah, and does he know what is going on? I mean... Yes, in the romantic sense of the movie, you would want to think yes, but then what, he eats a cat, yeah, it's a bit weird.
Yeah, like, I feel like it's trying to have it both ways and it perhaps doesn't work. You should,
yeah.
It's hard to straddle that line. I feel
it's just so, I just remembered, just talking about that, the scene where, you know, they're, like, both at the dinner table and she wants to tell him, like, how much he means to her, and you go into that sort of surreal black and white.
Oh, that's right, the dance
sequence. Dance number, yeah, which just comes out of nowhere, and again, I can see it might put some people off, but I just thought it was such another brave choice in a movie full of, like, brave creative choices.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's really beautiful.
It's again another example where it didn't quite work for me. It was maybe a bit too much, but again, I respected it and I love what it.
Yeah.
I love its love for that, because I love old black and white musicals and stuff as well. Like, I'm right there with him, but, like, as I'm watching the film, I'm like, oh, I don't know if this works.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Like, I wonder if this movie was similar, but it wasn't a fish man. It was just, like, some other minority group, or like a dude from a minority group. You could almost make the same film, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
With a more of a romance between these people that struggle to communicate for some reason, and they do it through sort of art or through movies or something like that. I mean, that's a completely different movie, but... Yeah, the actual literalness of the fish man does get in the way sometimes.
Yeah, totally. But then it's like the Catch-22 thing, because part of what I love about the film is its boldness and commitment to that. And it's like so Del Toro. Like, he loves the weird, gothic, monstery grossness.
Yeah.
You know, like...
He does.
Part of what I love about the film, even though it doesn't work for me, is that it just fucking goes for it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I admire that so much. And, married up with that thematic material is why I came out really, really high on the movie. But, you know, it's just like, you know, your love for Crimson Peak, which I really liked as well, you know, where he just, he always just swings for the fences,
yeah,
and doesn't care, you know, like that movie was a financial flop, but what a creative success it was, I would say.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
He never compromises on his vision, and that's just awesome.
I do really like that this is, I think it's like the film with the most Academy Award nominations, The Shape of Water. And it's like about fish sex. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's not about that. But, you know, it seems so genre-y. I mean, it does, when you think about it, like thematically, it's got all the right pieces. But it's so boldly within genre filmmaking. It's kind of surprising that it's got so many nods.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great. I hope it gives him some Hollywood mojo to make, you know, something bigger that he wants to, or something,
definitely,
whatever he wants to do. But I know he, you know, he's always wanted to do a Cthulhu or a H.P. Lovecraft film, and that's fallen through so many times. And we're sort of, you know, minor fans of that sort of work, I would say, Matt, or at least interested in some of the ideas in there. And I think if he could get to do that, that would be really cool.
Yeah, I feel like for me, I think that's why Crimson Peak works so well for me. It's like that's where his sensibilities click the most. Like, as much as I admire the romanticism of something like The Shape of Water, like you said, the weird monsterness sometimes clashes up against it, or, you know, it doesn't quite gel. Whereas once you put that in like a spookier setting, it's perfection, you know, like Pan's Labyrinth or something, I guess.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. Perfect marriage.
Yep. I will say too, I don't know why I need to clarify this, but I still think Pan's Labyrinth is his best film.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Even if my love for Crimson Peak is maybe higher. You know, like, I just had such a good time with that film. Though, having said that, I haven't seen Pan's Labyrinth in a long time, so perhaps I need to rewatch it. But, yeah, what a film that is.
Cool. Well, I guess that's the end of our catch-up edition here, Matt. I think that was an okay episode.
I hope so. I hope there was something interesting you can take out of that. It was good to sort of chat about those films because we hadn't either off-pod or on-pod
talked about them before. No, exactly. So. Yeah, and I guess that's the whole point of this, is to just catch up and just record what we would probably normally just talk about anyway.
Yeah.
And chuck it out there for everyone to have a listen to. It's good, yeah. And I kind of like, for a change, not having the formula. You know, sometimes we get bogged down in sort of following our structure, and it's nice just to have a bit more of a
looser chat,
freeform chat.
Yeah, definitely.
Probably because I'm lazy.
Exactly. You can't be bothered watching any trailers.
Yeah,
so we hope you enjoyed the episode. We'd love to hear what you guys thought of The Post or Shape of Water. You can email us at prepostfilmreview@gmail.com, and we'll reply to all the emails that we get. We're also on all the normal platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Letterboxd, chat to us there as well. And I guess we'll see you next episode.
Also, I left, so my parents stayed last night in this fold-out bed. I left it out because my audio is so echoey in this room.
Oh, you thought it would absorb some of the bounce.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if it makes a difference, because if it does, I'm going to get it out every single time we just
podcast. Just lie down on the bed while you
actually, that's not a bad idea. I could just fall asleep halfway through.